Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Sponge podcast. First things first, I'm here, Rob Beckett, with Ian Smith.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. And our guest, Tony Cotty.
How you doing?
Hello, Tony. All right?
Very good.
Normally, Jimmy Bullard's here.
Where is he?
There's no Jimmy Bullard.
I told Jimmy was coming.
He's ill, apparently.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, he's ill. Apparently not.
Monday Club. Yeah. Monday Club.
Apparently,
on Monday Club.
Apparently 15 pints of Stella. I mean, Carling.
Every drink. Looks like you've been on it, Kev.
Yeah. Look at that.
Put on a bit of weight here.
We haven't even introduced him yet, and he's broken a chair.
I'll have to lean this way.
We've had to get him a...
He snapped a metal hand off a chair.
You've snapped a metal.
That's the guns. I told you he's going to the gym regular.
So,
the full weight went on here.
Jimmy Bullard's replacement.
Yeah.
Kev Gallen.
Hello.
Hello, Kev. You've literally broken a chair immediately.
Let's have a look at that. That is absolute. That's.
That's the power of
that's
man.
Metal. That's metal.
That is metal snapped. We'll take a photo of that and we can put it on the old website. Whatever it is. We'll stick it on our teletext podcast, page. Yeah. Let's all try and snap our chairs. No, Jimmy Bullard. Do we know why Jimmy's... Do you know Jimmy at all, Tony?
I met him once on TV.
All right.
I think I'd done a Sky show with him.
Oh, how was that?
It was good, yeah.
He clams up if it's serious, didn't he?
Yeah,
he gives it all the bigging in the green room, clams up, didn't
he? He was quite serious that night.
Yeah.
He was steaming in the green room. That's where he was last
no,
night.
No, he's very ill. He's very ill. Sorry, yeah, the 10 pints of Stella does not... Carling, always
bad illness.
I've seen on Match of the Day, get asked a question and then just pass it on to another pundit because he doesn't know it. He's got asked about Sanchez, like, oh, don't ask me, I'm not a striker, ask Gallen.
The clawed Macaulay pundits. So, Kev Gallen, you've come in to replace Jimmy.
Yes, I'm here.
It was quite a last-minute call because Jimmy phoned in sick at 3 a.m, which is not ideal, is it? And then the poor producer rung me at 8, and I was like, Jimmy can't do it. I was like, all right, okay. Right, he went, hang on, I've got an idea. Put the phone down and rung back and went, Kev Gallen's doing it.
He's outside.
So, Kev, this is a great turnaround because didn't think he was doing this about 2 hours ago.
No, it was this or go to the gym.
Oh, really?
This sounded so much
better. And this one?
Don't need to go to the gym. You've already broken a chair with your bare hands.
That's what it is.
And what have you been doing? Because like Kev's been on before, Tony.
Yeah.
It was on once before, and then the following week, someone else didn't turn up, but Kev was here. Right. He just sort of knocks about the lobby.
Loitering out the front door,
It's been
with a can of Carlsberg.
It's been
extra.
Oh, is that what you drink?
Yeah.
And it's been 18 months. So what have you been doing?
Just waiting for the call, Rob. Obviously. And I'm so delighted to be here.
Apparently you've been doing a rival podcast.
Apparently, yes. I was told when I'd done it that they're your big rivals.
What's it called?
They were stabbing you lot in the back.
Were they having a go at us? Was it James Buckley?
I was protecting you.
The Dream Team.
The Dream Team, yes.
And how was that? How was it? Was it what were they saying about us?
I can't repeat it on me.
Really?
Yeah,
this is outrageous.
How was it? How was the podcast?
Yeah, it was all right.
Was it? He was giving it off.
He wants to get on it again. That's why he's not saying
it. Nice, you were slagging it off earlier,
don't,
Kev.
Don't go down to
LA.
It was actually, he was in LA and I was there.
That's what he did with me, phoned it in on Skype.
Yeah, it was on Skype, yeah.
Skyped it in.
What was he doing in LA?
Pilot season.
Pilot season, yeah.
I'd love to do that, mate, but no big deal.
You're an actor. Tony, Ian's an actor as well. Yeah. Did you watch, what was it you was in?
BBC One Biblical Drama, The Ark.
Funny enough, I missed that one.
And Tony, are you a big fan?
Is that why you got the beard? Were you Jesus?
Yeah. I've kept in character because I ain't got anything since.
So he's just waiting
for a sequel. There must be a sequel to Noah's Ark. Just everyone having to, all the family just having to get it on to get new population, isn't it?
What? Noah's Ark?
Everyone's died. They've all got the Ark.
Yeah.
So they've got to get it. I don't write the sequel. This is what's happened in the Bible.
Noah's Ark's,
are you on it?
If Noah's Ark's true, is it all in? We're all like,
we're all related,
and it's all incest.
And who were you on?
Yeah, then? I was Ham.
Burger.
I was Ham. One of Noah's sons called Ham. I don't know if they had
there was a few of them on there.
Oh yeah.
So how come there was only like one of each species, but it was more humans.
Yeah. Well, because he was going around going like, everyone, there's gonna be a huge flood. Get in my massive boat, and understandably, everyone was like, fuck off, mate.
I'm not very good with religion.
Can you get it on ketchup?
you can
Tony's
buy it.
Tony's
you can buy it on DVD.
Can you sign it?
I think we should edit that last 2 minutes out.
No, let's keep it in.
This is his CV we're trying to get up here. He's got nothing.
I need to remind him I've got a career. And I passed my driving test, if anyone remembers that from Series 3.
No, but when did you do your driving test?
Four minors.
You got four minors?
In the back of the car and I still passed. Little joke.
Well, that's good. Well done, Ian.
No, thank you.
So, you're trying to get an acting job that involves driving?
Yeah, I thought it might help.
Fast and Furious should be good in that.
Fast and Furious, Noah's Ark 7. It's in the future by then.
You're doing Jimmy's role, aren't you, today, Kev?
So, yeah, what does he do?
I don't know. What does Jimmy do? He's normally eating something.
Yeah, he has some olives.
Listens and then says something normally liable. Anyway, so you're doing the Jimmy Bullard role today, and Tony, you're our guest, so it's all about you today. Kev's sort of helping us chat to you and talk about your career in football, but this podcast sort of focuses on more of the unprofessional side of it stories.
Makes a change to talk about that sort of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't want to talk about formations and nonsense like that. We just want to talk about when you've been a bit unprofessional or funny things that have happened when you've been out drinking.
I know
for
a fact that these guys in their day, because a couple of my mates
only
played
one there,
West
mate.
Them. I'm not saying you, but that team.
That era.
Was Bish and
was it a bit lively?
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, West Ham, Everton, West Ham.
Because you was
Everton.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh, Everton. What's that?
That was the culture, though, Rob.
That was what it was.
It was normal. You know, you went out for a drink. You played your game. You
was
had six pints in the players' lounge afterwards, and then you drove home. And that was that was.
You was a bit younger though.
We went down to five when I turned up. That was how it was.
We used to do it.
That was the culture, wasn't it?
I remember Ian Dowie was like
I'm a team out of mine.
Yeah, but we played Tranmere away, and Jerry Francis was the manager, and he wasn't there. He was doing some scouting.
His haircut.
Yeah, he was getting his blow drying. And Downer said, "Right, lads." He was in charge.
Who's Downer?
Ian Dowie.
Oh, yeah. Downer.
Yeah.
All right.
So
why is
he
Downer?
I don't know.
No, I don't know. But no. He was Downer. West
yeah,
Down.
Yeah.
So that's a football nickname. No one knows. Oh, God.
Right. So at Tranmere, they got a massive pub in their players' lads, a pub. I remember coming off with Downer. It's like. 7 pints, and they're all loads of lads waiting, but there was loads of us in the pub. Caffrey's, remember Caffrey's in the old days, rocket fuel. Jesus Christ, fucking nearly chundering. Oh, great days. They were great days.
Well, you said about Ibiza, when you went to pre-season tour of Ibiza or in Ibiza? Why'd you go to Ibiza on a pre-season warm-up?
I don't know, but it was brilliant.
Who was that with?
QPR. So we get to the airport. We're on a 6 o'clock flight, but we thought, let's get to the airport about 2. And we've gone to the pub. And then we look on the screen. Oh, yes, our plane's been delayed 2 hours. We can stay in here a little bit longer. Right. So we're drinking, all about 8 of us, all drinking. We get on the plane, and the manager, who's still, he's in Ibiza ahead of us. So
not the best thing.
No. So the physio's in charge, but we're just getting, I think, Tim Breaker. You know Tim and have a teammate, Tim, yeah. So we're all just drinking. And Tim's like looking at us like, and we're like, yeah, we're drinking on the plane. We get off, we drive to the hotel. We have some sandwiches, and the manager said, lads, you know, go and have a drink if you want. We've had a long journey. 3 o'clock in the morning, we're all gone. Training at 8, hot, you know, I'd be roasting. We cannot pass the ball from 5 yards. We're not just doing a pass. Can't do it. We're at the end, giggling. Look, we can't even pass it. Hiding. Play a match. I just went, I ain't touching the ball. We're playing a match between ourselves. I just ran around, just running around, avoiding the ball, pretending I'm busy, closing down. Don't give me the ball. I can't see it. That went on for 4 out of the 5 days.
Can I tell my little pre-season trip story?
Yeah, of course.
When I was at Everton, manager, Howard Kendall, legendary manager, great man manager, but you know, he actively encouraged the boys to drink together, you go out together. We went out one pre-season, everyone went out except Pat Nevin and Andy Hinchcliffe, and they was the only two who went down for breakfast the following morning, and they got a bollocking for not going out with the lads. And it was pre-season, and I'm not joking, really? The manager told the pair of them off. And then you wonder why we started the season slowly, you know. It's just like, too much going on in pre-season.
And so John Lyle was your manager?
John was the manager, yeah.
And didn't he threaten to resign after you had a night out in Holland because you wouldn't pay fines or something?
That was McAvinny.
Oh, was it?
Frank had arrived, and John had organised our one and only pre-season trip for that season, which was to Amsterdam. Now, I mean, of all the places to take a playboy...
At the moment, it's been Ibiza and Amsterdam.
They looked after us in those days. Like, none of this going to Australia and China. We went to the proper places. So we go to Amsterdam.
We didn't go to play football.
That's right. We all wanted to enjoy ourselves pre-season. So we played against this crappy team and we got a 0-0 draw. And John Lowell said, oh, lads, brilliant pre-season. And we didn't win the game, but great effort, good application, all about getting ready for the first game, all that rubbish. And he said, right, like, I'm so pleased. I'm going to let you have a night out. But you've got to be back at 11 o'clock p.m. Right, so we've all gone out, the whole squad, gone into Amsterdam, found a nice bar, had a few drinks, and then I left with Frank McAvenny and Mark Wall, another scouser. He's got a scouser, a jock, and a cockney, the three of us. Right, we come back, walk into the hotel.
That's the start of a joke.
No. John Lowell's sitting in reception. It's like 10:45, and as we walk in, he's going, oh, well done, Frank, Tony, Mark, well done, brilliant, you know, 10:45, absolutely fantastic. He said, breakfast at 9 o'clock in the morning, go up and get a good night's sleep. So as we get into the lift, McAvenny looks at me. Again, this is promised a true story. He looked at me and went, listen, I don't go to bed at 11. I go out at 11. I want a drink, right? So I said, Frank, listen, I want another drink. I said, but the gaffer's in reception. So anyway, go down the fire exit. So as we're creeping down the fire exit, we could hear giggling. And we looked up and you've got the club captain, Alvin Martin, vice captain Tony Gow and Steve Walford with the same idea. They want another drink as well, right? So anyway, we bolted back to the bar we'd been to. About half an hour later, the rest of the squad arrived. Like, everyone's done the same thing. Down the fire exit, the whole squad's at this bar. And we rocked on about 3 a.m. And anyway, get back. Obviously, the manager's not in reception. It's 3 a.m. Have a few hours sleep. Come down for breakfast. And then he walks into the breakfast area, John Lowell, who was a fantastic manager, but a very powerful character, like a headmaster type. And he went, right, you lot. He said, I'm not happy. He said, I know some of you was out. So he's looking at, like, me, Frank and Wardy, just the three of us. That's all he's looking at. Everyone, he's not even looking at anyone else. He said, but we're a team, we're a squad. He said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk out the room. He said, if you went out last night, he said, you are fined £50. Now, in the mid-80s, £50, still a lot of money now, but it was like in the mid-80s, was a lot of money. So John Lyle walks out the room, came back in expecting £150 in the middle of the table. There was £1,200 in the middle of the table. Everyone had put £50 in.
Can't sack
you
all.
You can't sack them all, exactly.
No. It happened to us. We went out, we was in another one with Tenerife. We went on 3-6 right next, oh, right Jesus. Next to the players, the America, what the main strip. We like round the corner, yeah. And the manager says, "It's like we played a match, and it was now 11. And we've gone out for something to eat. It's now 11:30. He said to the lads, "Right, you can have a night out, but you've got to be back at 2. It's like 12 o'clock. We were like, we listened. We went, no. We all got together. Can't go back at 2. Can't go back. This is the last night. We've got to stay out.
So lads, like, it's work, not a stag do.
I'd only been there a week, and I'm like, lads, he can't sack us all. We all, everyone stays out. So we all like, he was waiting for us in reception. Yeah. All the lads are just waving. Sorry, Gaffer. Straight to bed.
They say 2 o'clock because they know you're going to go out. Yeah. So if they don't say 2 o'clock, you'll go until 10 in the morning because you said we can stay out. So it's like they give you a deadline. They know you're going to break.
Yeah.
We went to Sweden with QPR, and Jerry Francis was quite smart. He used to say, look, lads, you can go out, do what you want. But at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're on that pitch and you're running.
Yeah.
And so you'd be like, you can't push that's it that much because you're like... It, you go out and have a cup on it.
That was always the solution, back. Though. Yeah. The solution was, if you went out on a night out, especially pre-season, they'd just run you, and that was it. And like nowadays, the players, they'll run 100, 200 metres, 400 metres, but we was like a 10-mile run. You go around the forest or whatever, and that was it. And you'd sweat it out. You know. I mean, listen, the legendary Bobby Moore, it's common knowledge, he was a proper drinker, but then he would come in, he put the flipping black bin bags on, you remember that? You put that on, sweat it all out, and then you went again, and that was it. But just different culture, different times.
Well, talking about different times, different culture, didn't Steve Wolford try and jump out of the plane on the way back from the...
What? Now that was scary. That was on the way back from Amsterdam.
Apparently Steve Wolford tried to jump out of the plane.
Yeah, we had to all jump on him. He was trying to open the door. He was claustrophobic on the plane, and he's trying to open the door. Oh, so there's about six of us jumped on top of him.
It's my worst nightmare that someone goes psycho on a plane and tries to open the door.
Yeah. God, he said he was dehydrated, but I think.
Wanting to jump in the sea.
In the sky.
Nothing to do with getting in at 4 o'clock in the morning after
a
lot of
drink. A lot of people come back from Amsterdam just dehydrated. Just the old Amsterdam curse.
What dehydration. A trip that was.
Yeah, it's very dry there, isn't it?
Sounds a great trip, that.
Trying to get out of the plane. Also, John Lyle, like you said, is a bit of like the headmastery type. You said he'd had some strange training methods. I've got here, there was like hide and seek, diving headers in the snow, 35-man bundles and stuff like that. What was it? Hide and seek?
The 35-man bundle?
Yeah. Right, the 35-man bundle. You've done your research here, Rob. I'm impressed with the research he's done here. So the 35-man bundle, literally, was, he said, right, get all stand behind each other. Right, so you've got Alan Devonshire, who like, I mean, he's putting a bit of weight now, but he was like slim as anything. He's at the front, then Phil Parks, and then everyone lined up behind. So there was a line of 35 blokes, and you're just standing behind everyone. And so John, I don't know why, but he just said, right, when I say go, he said, I want the first person just to lay on the floor. Oh. And then the next one, and the next one. So I'm fine, I'm at the back. Right, so... He said, right, go. So Dev's laid down. Parks, he's flattened him. And then everyone jumps on. It was like a rugby scrum. So I'm at the back. I've done a running jump, landed on top of the pile. And anyway, he said, right, clear the bodies. Like, and then poor old Alan Devonshire.
Human centipede.
Alan Devonshire's at the bottom. And then you've got Parks. Am I allowed to swear, by the way, on this?
Of
right. So anyway, Parks, he gets up. He goes, that's the worst fucking thing I've ever done in all my life. He was raging, but the bodies were piled up. And John didn't explain why we'd done it.
I'm baffled.
Honestly, Kevin, I mean, he was very innovative, is the word, where he was looking, always looking to do different things. And then another one, we come out for training in the morning, like, so it was always like 10:30 start. Yeah. So we walk out 10:30 and we're just sort of standing in the middle of the field. And like John comes out and he goes, right, he said, I want to see the last one out of sight. So we're like, what do you mean? I said the last one out of sight. So we're just like the red arrows. We've gone like that, and we're hiding behind the building. One of the lads was hiding behind like one of those stick trees, you know, like it's about 3 inches wide. He's hiding behind the tree. There's about 10 behind the dugout. And it was just him trying to get you thinking and do different things. And then we'd like diving headers in the snow, like you say. And then one of the
rugby
best.
Football?
Yeah, rugby football. We've done that one as well. Like he said, oh, it's predicted it's going to be a freezing pitch at the weekend. Like it's going to be, you know, it's like we used to play on them. I mean, when it was a frosty pitch, like nowadays they get called off. Well, you don't have it under soil heating and that. But he said it's going to be a bumpy pitch. His ball's going to bobble everywhere. So we're going to play with a rugby ball today. All right, so you're playing with a rugby ball, right? The ball, obviously, you're going like that, and the ball, you know, trying to play football with a rugby ball is not easy. And anyway, after about 15 minutes, the ball came to Mark Ward. He got the ball and he just done a punt and kicked it in the garden, so we couldn't play anymore. That was it. The lads went, oh, well done, Wardy, and that was it. And we moved on to something else.
But, football, badminton.
It's just crazy when you look back at it.
Well, we've done some funny, like in Holloway, we used to do some funny things.
Like, oh, he seems like it'd be.
Yeah,
nuts.
Like, I mean, we were training and I think we were doing sort of like maybe sort of 11v11 a match, and Kenny Jackett was his assistant at the time, and it's all proper training, being a bit serious, whatever.
Yeah.
And then he'd come out and he'd have like a, you know, jukebox thing, whatever.
Boombox.
Boombox, yeah. And he'd play music and he'd start dancing. Liven up, you miserable fuckers. And he put it and he put it in the middle of the thing and start dancing. Come on, let's get your dance moves going. And he'd be
dancing.
Well, the lads were like, what are you doing? And he'd be dancing, but not like for like 10 seconds. He'd be going for about 5 minutes, like doing all these shapes. And all the lads just giving, what's he doing? But no one else was dancing, but he would do some
just,
silly
what
things.
What kind of music? Anything in particular? Just whatever dance.
Just
track
whatever.
Was,
just
whatever
some nonsense. Like
when you're playing, you go. You know when you see people go out into the fans, and everyone's like, "What happened?" Because I feel like you'd go in the fans and then immediately just think, "I wish I didn't do this," because it looks like they're like on you and like licking you, screaming shit at you, like.
Do you ever,
when you go and celebrate, and the fans,
they're all
like,
but
all, like,
just they just want to cuddle you, and they like, want to like, and I feel like they've touched and been a part of it. And I said about earlier, they're so distant. I think now the players, like, they're very in the bubble, protected, and the fans are over there, and the players are over here. But
it's also booking now.
Yeah.
Which is sport.
To go in with
which is the money. Is
You can't jump in like the old. You could jump in and it's all right.
Do you know what?
Canton,
do you know what the most frightening thing was? Was the last game of the season, last home game of the season. I don't know whether it happened at QPR, at West Ham. It was just traditional pitch invasion, which is great, right? But what happens is they all come running on and they literally rip your shirt off. They rip your shorts off and they're trying to take everything off you.
35 man bundles.
In the end, like I was coming off, I had a little slip on, like me, and like socks went and everything, like boots, and you just got your slip on. And
little
you just,
pants.
Just be pants on. And they literally ripped it off, and it can be a bit scary, you know.
You want to do 87th minute, just pretend you pulled something.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Steve Wolford didn't like that if he was a bit dehydrated.
No, exactly. No, he wouldn't have liked that one. But it was a bit scary. It would just all pile on and that.
Also, as well, I think the game's changed slightly because of the money involved in it. Because I've got this here. Once you tried to do a contract negotiation, was it with John Lyle? And he asked for some money and he'd see what he could do or whatever. And it took a couple of weeks. And you went back in and he offered you a new contract. And then you said, oh, can I ring my family to see what they think? And he picked up the phone and slammed it in front of you.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was it. Like, well, he didn't have agents. Yeah. And yet. You can, this is why I do defend the role, the good agents. I know there's bad ones, but. If you imagine, like me, I was I was an 18-year-old kid, and I just played the whole season in the first team, and I was the top scorer. I got 19 goals as an 18-year-old, and at
that's
the end
amazing.
Of
amazing.
Well, I just started young. I was in the team at 17, and then
but if that happened now, that'd be even like.
Oh, now, but you'd get under grand a week for owning it and all that sort of stuff. But can you imagine going in like if you like trying to deal with Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger, someone like you look up to? And so anyway, I looked up to John Lyle, the legendary West Ham manager, and when we were in the end of the season, and he always said, oh, the board have done brilliant for you. They've done absolutely brilliant, the board, right? And then he showed me the contract, and it was good. It was like, I don't know, three times more than what I'd been getting, but I wasn't on a lot of money anyway. And
the other players won't tell you what they're getting.
No, exactly. And I looked at it, and I said, I'm really pleased. The board have done brilliant. I said, but, you know, I need to speak to my dad. And he picked the phone up, one of those old-fashioned phones, like, you know, like you see in Falls and Horses. Picked it up with a wire, slammed it down, and went, ring your dad. It was one of them, and I had to ring my dad up, and then my dad said, well, no, you need to think about it. And eventually I managed to escape out of the office, but I had to go back the following day to give him a yes or no, because he was just desperate to tie me down. But it was scary, and that's why I say, like, you can understand why players want agents.
You need an agent to represent you if you don't know what you're doing. I mean, Ian's not got paid for this for 3 years, have you?
No, I don't know what's
still coming, though. Love it.
No, my agent didn't do any work for it, but got paid commission.
Really?
I've left him now, so you know what I mean?
Surprising.
You did say you think players deserve to get deserve to demand whatever they want, sort of salary wise. Do you still agree with that now? It's sort of gone up a notch.
It's just
Because Ronaldo's on 288 grand a week after tax.
Pogba's on a bit now as well.
He's on 290.
What? 290, yeah.
Ronaldo. Messi's on 275, but Pogba's on the second
but
most.
But don't you think, Tony, who gets the money then?
Graziano, so if the Graziano Pella.
Oh, yeah.
He's gone to China, though.
260 a week.
Jesus.
After tax in China.
I always say this, like, you know, I'm a football man. I'm a passionate football man. I always say the top players should get whatever the going rate is.
There's so much money in football. He's got to go somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he should have it, the chairman.
Yeah. And don't forget, when we played, I mean, obviously it was all in proportion, everything, but we still got good money compared to your average man who was doing working down at Ford's or whatever. Yeah. Like, we was getting good money compared to that. We just wasn't getting stupid money.
Yeah.
It was good money, but we was probably getting 5-6 times the national wage, whereas now they're probably getting 100, 150, 200 times the national wage.
Yeah.
And that's
just
the difference.
There's more, this is a really boring stat for the podcast, but
Paul, don't break out of a lifetime.
Paul Pogba, no, we're not editing this. We're not editing this. People want football facts as well.
Because
I'm a Man United fan. Paul Pogba's transfer amount as a percentage of Man United's total revenue is less than Dennis Law's was. So when they paid money for Dennis Law and they bought him, that was, say, something like 60% of their total revenue at the time.
Yeah.
Paul Pogba was something like 50. So it's just that they're making more money. So really, the Paul Pogba transfer is completely reasonable within that compared to what they've done in the past. That's not going to make it in,
that's
is
actually,
it?
That's
not
going to
make it in. I'm very interested. Thank you.
That was a great stat.
What about,
yeah,
his agent, though? What did he get? 16, 20 million?
20 million.
Yeah, but
that's unbelievable.
So obviously, though, with the money and that, it's become a bit more professional, like, and with, like, camera phones and stuff. So, like, the stories of you guys going out, they can never get away with now just because they get pulled up on it. Like, obviously, you used to go drinking after sometimes. Frank McAvenny was out more. But did you ever drink before a game? Is that anything you ever did? Or
yeah.
You go, yeah.
I think we're moving on to Everton again. Howard Kendall. And
legend.
Yeah, listen, I'm not can I just say, I'm not being any way disrespectful, because he did die last year.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I loved Howard. I got on really well with him.
Yeah.
We had our ups and downs. But he, when he took over, because Colin Harvey signed me at Everton.
Was that the two million?
Record transfer.
Exactly.
Which was like, for
a lot
me,
of pressure. You are the Pogba.
What year was that?
1988.
And I was
the most expensive
what
ever.
What percentage
British
of the
transfer.
Annual turnover was that doing?
How would I know that?
Joel's pointing at me like that, as if that first fact's going to get cut. And that's what people want in this podcast. They want facts.
That is a great first fact. That cannot football. Get cut.
Facts, not but fun.
If that gets cut, I'm going to do the full Dean Windass story. You're not going to get anything on this episode.
Going back to 88, you had the big guns were like Everton and Liverpool, who had really successful in the 80s. And you had like Tottenham, Arsenal, Manchester United. And that was it. It was like a big five more than anything else. Everton paid, the actual transfer fee was £2,050,000.
Yeah.
Because Gazza had gone Newcastle Spurs for £2 million. And West Ham said, I could leave if Everton paid more than what Gazza cost. Oh. So they paid the extra 50 grand to get me. And then all of a sudden, I'm the most expensive player ever in the history of British football.
Yeah.
And I found it really hard. I really, you know, because for me, and I'm not, don't mean it's big headed. I knew I was a good player. I knew on my day I was a fantastic goal scorer. On my day, not every day, obviously, but on my day, I knew I was a good goal scorer. But for me to be the most expensive player ever in the history of football, and I'm thinking, like, Gazza, was a fantastic player, like, and I'm being compared with Gazza, and I'm thinking, I don't want that pressure. I didn't want that on my shoulders.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get on with my job. But I had to deal with it. And then I went and got a hat trick on my debut, scored after 34 seconds.
Here it comes.
That was it. Every week, I'm going to get a hat trick. Yeah, you know, I always say the best thing I ever did at Everton was my debut, but it was also the worst thing because it put the pressure even
so
more.
High.
Anyway, I've drifted away from the drinking.
Yeah, you're trying to swerve away from getting pissed before a game time.
So anyway, Colin Harvey signed me, but he got the sack, and then Howard took over. And Howard actually encouraged the boys to have a glass of wine on a Friday night. So you've got a squad of 16 in those days, so you've got four tables of four. And what used to happen, he used to put a bottle of wine on each table, right? Which was great. But the problem was there was three tables that weren't drinking. And there was one that was. And I got sucked in a couple of times with the one that's drinking. So what happens, pass that bottle over because we've done our one. And I'll pass that one. So you end up, you're almost having a bottle of wine each. And listen, very unprofessional, but the manager encouraged it, but it wasn't really police because he was sort of eating in the room next door, or whatever, and he trusted you to get on with it, which is great. But
yeah,
you're all human. You have a couple of glasses of wine, you think, "Oh, this is a nice."
Well, to be fair, that seems like a lot quite a civilized drink before a game, though. Whereas Kev Gallen went out on the piss in his tracksuit and then come on as a sub. That's what he told us last time, Kev.
Yeah. Don't have the first one.
Yeah, that's
don't
right.
Have the
yeah,
first one. Yeah. That is the clue. Yeah. That's the secret. Don't have the first one. Because you have the first one, you go, "I'll have another." And then, "Oh, you know, have another." And then you're getting a little bit pissed and you go, "Oh, fuck it. I'm just going to go for it now."
There was a couple of games at Everton where I must admit I had a bit of a fuzzy head in the morning. And it's not good when not professional when you do it. But, you know, did it affect my performance? I don't know. Sometimes, I always say, like, you know,
it might take the pressure off sometimes. Sometimes you have a drink, you can relax.
Yeah, that's right. But I always used to say, no matter, because they go on about eating and all that sort of thing. But my Saturday morning, I used to have a big breakfast. So I'd have sausages, egg, bacon, beans, toast and everything. And that was it. I didn't eat then until the game kicked off. And I know now, everyone will tell you, you can't do that. But
it was a lot of fuel for you.
Yeah, but the point being is, like, some weeks I was crap, but other weeks I'd get 2-3 goals or whatever. And then no one ever said, like, "Oh, you should have..."
But the thing is,
you forget, because
they like to give you food. I retired 5 years ago, but they used to be eating about 12, and that for me was just too late. Yeah. I'd go on the pitch feeling bloated.
Yeah.
I fucking can't run here. So I used to just, can't do that anymore. 10 o'clock.
Scrambled
eggs and toast, and then I'd have a banana about 12 or something. Yeah.
But the thing is, as well, though, like when you played there in the 80s, if you were like a bit of a fuzzy head or having that big fry up, it wasn't like you was playing against everyone that was on this mental regime. Everyone had a similar diet. Everyone was.
Everyone else had been doing it. Exactly. It was a level playing field. When I first got in there, just quickly back to West Ham, when I was a 17 year old, I'd made my debut, and then the following Saturday, we played Manchester United, your team, away in the FA Cup. And we travelled up on a Friday night. I'm 17, right?
Yeah.
And I had a very normal upbringing. We get to the hotel in Manchester, and they said, "What do you want for your dinner?" And I'm sort of listening to everyone else. "Well, fillet steak." I think, "Fillet steak? I'd never had fillet steak, really. I'd had a little bit, not a fillet steak, because that was the top of the range. So I had my fillet steak and chips or whatever, mushrooms, and on a Friday night. Came down for the pre-match meal. It was a 3 o'clock kickoff. 12 o'clock. And all the lads were having fillet steak and beans, and that was your pre-match meal. I mean, imagine if you'd done that now, because it's one of the worst things, isn't it, in terms of digesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm thinking, well, I'm 17. I'm gonna have another fillet steak. Yeah. I went home and told everyone I'd had 2 fillet steaks. We lost 2-0. That weren't important. But I've had me 2 fillet steaks.
Yeah, you had 30 quid on steak.
We lost, but we ate well.
Yeah. Bed and balls. Yeah. Right now, Ian, it's time for your FIFA quiz.
A FIFA quiz.
So
FIFA quiz.
It's do you want to explain, Ian?
I haven't got this. Joel, the producer, puts together this FIFA quiz, and every week someone criticises. Who's done it this week? Chris has done it this week. Basically, whoever does it, it's always a sack of shit, and I get criticised for it. People go, "Oh, this quiz."
Have we got to answer this? Yeah, or is this for the listeners?
Basically.
Can you just explain what's going on, Ian?
Right. So, this is your FIFA ratings out of 100, and whoever comes closest wins a point. So, Kev's stats have been free. FIFA 2009.
This is a computer game,
Tony.
FIFA, the computer game.
Yeah, it's computer generated football.
This would be what my kids play. Right?
Your kids are playing.
Oh, by the way, guys, I've got a YouTube channel now, Rob Beckett, and I'm playing people on FIFA on it. Sorry, Kev.
Sorry, mate.
You'll be desperate to get on it once I get a few subscribers, mate. You've been clawing at me door, you little peasant.
Sorry.
How many subscribers have you got?
Got 12. Two. I was just starting 12. 12. 12, actually.
Full-time Devil's the channel I work for. Got over 200,000, no big deal.
Right, let's just do this.
So basically,
FIFA computer game your kids play?
Yeah.
They've taken...
What year is
that? FIFA 2009 for Kev, where he's age 32 at MK Dons. And Tony is from FIFA 99, where you're 34 at Leicester. So who is going to win on speed?
Tony.
Not 34, surely.
We were 32.
30.
Stone.
Yeah, it's only 2 years in it, but neither of you are fast, according to FIFA.
Okay.
We're fast over a yard.
What do you reckon you got?
Over 1 yard.
Out of 100, what do you reckon?
Out of 100, I reckon I got about 71. But you've done this before to me last time and absolutely ruined me. And don't start again. Lie.
So you think you're 7-1. Out of 100, Tony, what do you think?
I have got no idea where you're going with this. All I know is I probably would have scored 2 goals that game. I might not run anywhere.
How fast?
I'm 75. I've got no idea.
Out of 10, how fast do you think you were? About 79?
I was very quick when I was younger, but as I've got towards the end.
So 75.
Yeah. So you got 44.
I
didn't come up with these. This is FIFA. Look at him like I invented FIFA.
See this geezer here? He cuts about 30% just to mug us off. Believe me.
Right. So what, Kev, 65.
Oh, I don't.
That's all right, isn't it? Right, shot power. these ruin you by the end.
Yeah, I know. I'm going for shot power.
Yeah.
I'm going for 68.
Ooh.
70, I don't know.
I'll give you a clue. Both people can enjoy this.
All right, okay. I was nearly right then.
What did you say?
70 and 68. We were nearly there, weren't we?
68 in the middle. 69 for Tony.
Nice.
I was the only one who got that, wasn't I?
Tony and Ian are vibing. I've got no idea what's going on.
Old school joke, Robbie. It was old school.
It's a new double act. Sniff and Cutty.
Cannon and ball. Rivals.
You got 70. I'll skip to some of the good ones. Aggression. Who do you think is the most aggressive?
I wasn't aggressive at all. If they wanted the ball, I'll let them have it.
Well,
not me. I'll have a go, but
can't be me more aggressive, surely.
Oh, I don't know. You're showing your colours now, mate. Well, yeah. Is it me?
If we had a camera.
I said it can't be me. I did say, is it me?
Well, Tony.
I'm getting aggressive with these stats.
Tony got 75 out of 100.
Bloody hell.
Right, so I'm more aggressive than the power in my shooting and how quick I am. Yeah, that's the best attribute of my game, aggression.
You're not happy with FIFA, are you, Tony?
Right. A lot of aggression. Kev, you're on 57. Still quite it's aggressive.
Outrageous.
What about, do the last one. This is quite a funny one, I think. Tackling.
That is funny.
Didn't tackle. I never made a tackle.
Eight.
Well, that's how many tackles he did in his whole career.
Must be 24 or something.
Like, one tackle hurts.
You've done well in this one. Kev...
38.
You've overestimated how good you were at attacking.
Really? That bad? 20s?
Yeah. 21.
What did Tony
that
have?
That is awful.
Tony got a 75. That's not bad. Aggressive tackler, but not very good at running.
Who done these?
Chris didn't. I'm FIFA, didn't
I? What an absolute load of nonsense.
Well, that is
nonsense, isn't it?
I made 1 2-footed tackle with someone, got up and said, I thought I broke both my legs. I went, I'm never tackling again. That's it. Over. Quit.
Did
tackling.
You ever have
and they're right. On my one, they're right. I don't know about Tony. Did you have Dan's a good tackler.
No. Did you have any fights on the pitch or any sort of squaring up of anyone? Just avoided
well,
all
that? Well, square up, but no.
Oh, who did you square up to?
Loads of people.
Just really? Mouthing off. Yeah, did you used to get in their ear like and wind them up on the pitch or just...
Well, it only depended if they sort of started on me first and then I'd
what
give
kind of stuff
back.
would be said? Did you ever have that, Tony?
Shit.
You're just not winding people up with verbals to get in their head.
I very quickly realised, Rob, that I was like, I'm small. I'm still small now, obviously.
And yeah,
like when you've got Tony Adams and you're looking up like that, 6'4" or whatever, you know, I very quickly realised, don't get involved in any verbals. There's no point. I wasn't going to win that. Yeah. Don't get involved in a physical battle because I'm not going to win that. Yeah. In my mind, it was just all about movement, which it still holds true now. If you move around, then it was catch me if you can. That was it.
Yeah.
And so I just moved, and that was how I developed my game and where I got into space because of the movement. But I couldn't get involved in physical battles. But in those days, it was great because, well, we weren't great, but the 30 seconds into the game, they used to roll a ball into you and the centre half would just go woof like that and put you up in the air from behind. Like now, it'd be a red card, but you used to, and the ref used to come over and say, oh,
just try to
first
it.
One's free, yes, okay. Just that was what they used to say, the referees.
Achilles,
I know, it was unbelievable.
In a wheelchair, but
you didn't have any of that then, you just kept out of it, or do you used to?
No, when I got older, when I was younger, no, but then when I got older, yeah. Just
saying your shit.
Just your shit, you're the worst player I've ever seen.
Really?
Things like that, you're crap. Look at you, you're rubbish.
You're big hands, yeah.
Don't forget, it was all about partnerships in those days, wasn't it? So, like, I mean, I had McAvinny at West Ham, he used to get involved. Emil Heskey, I know, has been a guest, and I played 3 years at Leicester with him.
Yeah.
But Emil was just a brute, and he used to push everyone out of the way.
He wouldn't tell us anything like that. We ask him if he'd get
quite
his
quiet
scraps
bloke,
and stuff,
isn't
he? But he's quite quiet and polite, so he'd be like, no, never got
he
any
just
any trouble.
He didn't get on. He didn't
I don't think he had fights.
No, he wasn't aggressive. He wasn't aggressive, but he was so physically powerful, and he used to knock people out of the way and all that. And then he'd run down the line, beat three players, cross it and I'd tap it in. Get all the glory.
Yeah.
It was great. Fantastic. I loved it.
Who did you partner up front? Was anyone who used to do your dirty work for you?
Well, I started off with Les Ferdinand, and he was a big
fantastic.
Yeah, great.
Very good at Edwin, wasn't he? Not that tall, though, was he? He's not massive.
No, he's only 5'10", 11. Yeah. 5'10", but he could leap.
What are you, 5'6", 5'7"?
Yeah, about 5'2". Fucking idiot. Leave that in, Joel. The idiot bit. No, but he was a big, powerful bloke. So yeah. I was a kid, and it was great for me. So he could, he would take the hits a little bit as I got older, and then I was always sort of, you always probably partnered, except for Frank McAvenny, but you'd have been partnered with sort of a bigger, more physical type, maybe.
Yeah, Graham Sharp as well.
Like yeah,
Paul
so Goddard, good player.
No, Paul
yeah,
Goddard was a good player, player, was a smaller player. So but, yeah. I had a real mixture of different strike partners.
Had Paul
yeah.
Furlong, who was a big bloke as well.
Good player.
Yeah, very good player.
Yeah, good player. Yeah.
And then, who was that? That's about it. But do you know what I mean? That's it. That's all we need now. Done.
Yeah, done.
But as you got older, yeah, you'd be saying all sorts.
Getting in their heads and
just
stuff.
Just like people shanking off the pitch, you'd be giving it, well, that's rubbish, what are you doing trying to keep it on the pitch?
I played when I was 18, it just came to me, I played against Spurs and I played against Graham Roberts and Paul Miller.
Ooh.
Two really, really tough players. And what happened was Spurs got a corner and I never used to go back to corners because I was like 5 foot nothing and all I did was get in the way, so they used to stay on the halfway line. So I'm standing on the halfway line watching Spurs about to take a corner and Paul Miller come up to me, just elbowed me like that, literally, right on cheek and that. Said, what'd you do that for? He went, just to fucking let you know I'm here. That's what he said. So that was it after that, and I just kept away from him. And we won 2-0. So.
Broken jaw. But,
it was a physical game back then.
Yeah.
You know, and even
it's a difference. People say that, but that's assault, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not a physical game. That is,
yeah, but there was no cameras, Rob. There was no cameras.
Yeah, but like, doesn't stop it being assault, does it?
No, of course. Yeah, but if you remember, I mean, Paul Davies was the one who originally first. Got caught with the, it was like a high camera that got him. And
that's when it all started.
Yeah, and then after that,
so
everyone...
So they used to do that a lot then, just like, because obviously, like, you know, it's just a physical game, but you'd just be standing there and the game's miles away and they'd just come up and elbow you in the head.
Yeah, you would get, like, aggressive players like that. And that's why I say, I couldn't take him on because he's 6 foot two. And I just thought, right, well, I've got to find other ways to be clever. And that was how it was.
I've got a similar one, but I was like, you were a kid, obviously, then, a bit younger.
18. Yeah. I was 18. Yeah.
I was 32. And Martin Keown, I'm walking up for a corner, Martin Keown just walked up to me. He was about 37, 38.
Tough player, Martin.
Yeah, just come up and kneed me in the bollocks. And I just looked at him, what are you doing? And he just went, and I just went, fucking hell. I was like, what are you doing?
It was intimidation, though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
you're intimidation. Not intimidation. God, I'm not. I'd get well away from him, by the way. Still shit myself.
Still scared when you see him.
Yeah. No,
was he the one of the toughest players you played against, Keown, then?
Oh, yeah.
Also, right, you was at West Ham with Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
As well. How was that? What was he like as a manager?
I really enjoyed working under Harry. Now, listen, you know, Harry's Harry, isn't he? We know what he's like. And at the time, he was bringing in a lot of the foreign players.
Yeah.
And it was a changing time at West Ham, but... I had 6 years at Everton, which was great, and then I re-signed for West Ham, and I got sent off on my debut, well, second debut, because I tried to lunge at Rob Jones. Remember Rob Jones, the old Liverpool fullback?
Oh, and
took him out.
I had a little microstar figure.
That's the tackle. Yeah. That's why you got 75%.
Yeah, maybe they just saw that game.
Maybe that was it. So I got sent off on my debut, and everyone was saying, oh, what are we buying back for? And then I had a 3-game ban, and then when I came back, I scored the winner. We beat Villa 1-0 and on my home debut again. But Harry was great. He was he was a good man manager, I think. And you know, but I felt that he only liked the players for a couple of years, and then he was then looking to turn it around.
Unless it was Nico Cruncher, and it just
He had a couple that he sort of took everywhere with him. But in the main, you had a couple of years, and then he just
moved on.
So
but John Moncur was there with you. He was a bit of a.
Monks was an absolute lunatic. he's just become a born again Christian over the last 3 or 4 years.
Really.
Yeah, I said to him, Monks, I said, like, why, you know, why have you, after all, Harry was as a player, and he was mad as anything, and he was Gazza's mate, and he had a lot of fun together. I said, why have you become a born-again Christian? He said, I had my 40th birthday party, all the family's there and everything, and he said, I knew it was time to change when at 11 o'clock I was standing on a table with nothing on, dancing. In front of his family, absolutely stark naked. So that was it. So that was the cue for him to change.
I don't think he needs Christianity. I think he just needs to have like a glass of squash instead of a pint.
But he's done it. It was a bit like his party
piece. Again, Robinson's drinker.
It was his party piece, though, Rob, because what he used to do, like...
His party.
We had, in the Harry Redknapp days, and they was decorating the training ground. So yeah. They got the painters and decorators in and everything. We'd gone out to start our warm-up, half past 10, as I said, and we're just doing it. We used to do 3 or 4 laps just as a little jog to get into it. And everyone's like, where's Monks? Because we knew he was in. But he wasn't injured, but he just wasn't running around with the group. And all of a sudden, Monks comes out, right, and he literally has got a pair of boots and socks on. He's got absolutely nothing else on, but he borrowed a paintbrush and painted his hair white. And there's all paint dripping down his face where he'd obviously borrowed it off the painter. And he's bollock naked. And he just starts to run with us. But the best thing about him is he doesn't laugh or anything. He does it and just sort of...
Oh, really?
You know, like, and he's waiting for everyone to laugh at him, which obviously we all are. And he's saying, what are you laughing at? And all that. It was just like absolutely brilliant. And he's going, Monks, fuck off in. Go and get your clothes off.
I want to go to his church. Oh. Imagine him on a Sunday morning.
He was proper funny bloke.
Julian Dix as well was there when you were there as well.
The best tribute I can give Dixie is that he was a fantastic footballer. I mean, he was very, very aggressive and he loved woofing people and putting them in the chicken run and taking players out. And this is in the days when you could tackle and he got sent off a lot of times.
The chicken run's a bit of...
The old east side.
Yeah, it's
up,
not
Upton
like a
Park.
Euphemism, like sticking...
No, that was, it was what it was called. Well, a few of the boys should be saying
woofing
over
and
there.
Sticking them in the chicken run. Sounds like Julian Dix is really getting his own little 30-man bundle on the go.
This was the days when the stand was about 2 or 3 yards literally from the pitch, and as someone was running towards it, you could give him a little nudge, and then they'd go into the chicken run, at which point all the boys would be giving him a bit of a pounding. Come out like that.
All the supporters are just steaming into him.
Yeah, it's right. You just give him a nudge and like pinching
him. Now you need a fucking cannon to get him over in the new ground.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Need a transit van. Barge him in the transit van.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Drive to the crowd.
Just land on the track. Land on the running track. So anyway, Dixie was just, but he never used to warm up or anything. He'd just get a can of Coke, drink a can of Coke, and then go out and play. No warm up, no stretches, nothing.
Really?
And he'd still be the best player on the pitch.
Right, before we go though, this is
another quiz.
No, it's the team talk feature. God. You just watch this and enjoy this. You can judge. Right. Basically, before we used to do punditry, we used to give Ian and Jimmy or Kev and out here today a goal scoring situation. That's a report back like there was on Soccer Saturday. Yeah. However, this is the team talk one. So basically, you're in charge of a team and you've got to do the halftime team talk. So I'll give you the situation and you need to. Yeah. So Kevin, Ian. You
these
need to.
And who are they doing a talk to?
These
you
are
or
weird
me or
as well.
To us two.
To us two. Yeah, so to me and Tony, you've got a
bit of inspiration.
Yeah, so you take turns. So Kevin, you're up first. I'll give you a situation. You've got to imagine you're the manager and give it some.
I usually scream and shout.
Yeah, scream and shout and just get everyone going. It's up to you, your management style. So basically, you're going to do Jimmy's. Do you want Ian to go first or do you want to go
first?
Let
me see what he does first.
You sure?
Go on, yeah.
All right, okay, then you can see what it is.
I can't move the microphone back because I scream because I'm a passionate manager.
So basically, Ian's not quite management level yet because he's sort of new in the game, where you are the manager. So Ian, you're the you've been promoted to from waterboy to the kit man.
Yeah.
So Ian's the kit man.
Well, you don't do the team talk.
Oh. Yeah, I know, but do you want to let me?
I'm building up to it.
He's building up to management level.
This
is his story, yeah?
Doing my coaching badges.
So basically, you're the kit man, Ian.
Yeah.
The kit has come out pink after a pair of red shorts was left in the wash.
Fucking hell, who's done that?
Billy has forgotten all the socks. Billy's Ian's assistant. You need to sort it all out before the match starts in 35 minutes. How are you going to sort out the situation? What are you going to say to Billy?
Oh, God. Right. You've got... Can you lead me into it?
Okay, I'll do... Yeah, okay.
So, like, I'll say Ian, you... Here, Billy, pass me the kit? And then...
What do I address you as? Ian or Sir?
Gaff.
Gaff. Okay, sure.
What, the kit man? Gaff?
Yeah. You made a gaff if you flipped me... Put a red shorts in.
So right. You say, oh, sorry, Gaff, they've all gone pink.
Okay.
And then I'll get into character. Yeah. We'll see some acting.
Gaff.
Hang on a second. I haven't asked you anything. Good.
Okay, sorry, Gaff.
He's a bit aggressive. He said
that
me.
He's definitely 85.
He's going to get a sack soon.
Like Roy Keane. He's going to Alfinger Haaland me in a minute.
He's got the beard.
Right.
You all right, Billy? Can I see the kit, please, mate?
Yeah, bit of a problem, Gaff. You know your red shorts you asked me to wash?
Yeah.
Your red shorts you wear for training, just to
yeah,
watch.
What have you, yeah, you put them in a separate wash, I imagine. Otherwise, they bleed into the white away kit.
Yeah, so I haven't. I put them in the same wash by accident.
And what's happened?
All the kit's pink.
All the kit's fucking pink? You piece of shit, Billy. We're going round in a fucking... We're not a team full of
football team. We're not Everton's current away kit, maybe? Fuck you, Billy, you're gone. We can't be seen. We might as well go off with no clothes on. Painting our hair white or something. Dripping down our face. At least, thank God, we've got some socks.
Yeah, they're pink as well. It's all pink. What do I mean to do with a kit?
We'll just go out with no socks then, mate. We'll go out with no socks and sandals and a thong. I don't know what to say to you anymore. Why can't we just play in the home kit? I've just thought that's quite a sensible solution, actually.
Oh, yeah, we're at home, aren't we?
Home kit. Yeah, yeah, we just play at home. No, that's absolutely fine, Billy. No worries.
Oh, good.
We'll get them sorted for next week.
Oh, thank you. No worries. Thanks, Gaff. Yeah, cheers, Gaff.
Bit of a resolution there.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. It is. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Got a resolution out of it.
Thank you.
Right now, Kev.
Bye.
So basically, you're managing Jimmy's veteran team because he's off ill. Anyway, so Jimmy's veteran team, the one bell. Things aren't going very well for them at halftime. They're losing 1-0 in the cup. Jimmy's tucking into a bowl of chips. Jimmy's
a player still?
Yeah, he's a player still. So you're the manager. He's sitting there just eating chips. They're losing 1-0. And the pitch is in a bad way after some heavy rain. Let's hear what you can say to get the team going.
Lads. Lads. What the fuck's going on? Jimmy, put the chips down. Son, we're 1-0 down against a bunch of amateurs. You fat git, pass it to fucking him. You run about and fucking get stuck in. The pitch is shit. Put it in the air, put it in the box and cause some fucking havoc. I've had enough of you fuckers, I'm off. See you later. Fucking pull your fucking socks up. You bunch of beep.
And I'm kidding. Come in, say the last minute.
When in doubt, just throw a load of swear words.
Proper old school team talk, that one.
What, were you having a beep at the end after all those fucks?
I thought it was going to be a CUN team. Yeah. I better not
drop that.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, thanks very much, lad. It's been a brilliant episode. Thanks for coming on and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Cheers, boys. Thanks for having me.
And if you're listening, don't forget to subscribe, rate the podcast, share the podcast. Write comments, constructive feedback, as well as if you like it or not.
Oh, and no, don't ask for them, mate.
Don't ask them. But
I reckon I'll be on the receiving end of some of them.
Please,
quizzes, mate.
Keep rating it, sharing it, subscribing, and hopefully we'll move up and take on the number one spot.
Jimmy
definitely
beat
Dream Team.
Next week as well.
Who's
Jimmy might
one?
Be back. Who's number one?
I don't know.
I don't know who's number one anymore. Who cares? There's a serial was for a bit.
This one.
Did Jimmy come back? Because Kev done well.
Yeah, he did very well, didn't he?
Yeah, Jimmy might have a job here.
We need to make sure he's actually okay.
Yeah.
Right, cheers, Dad. See you next week. Bye.
Sorry, Jim.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.